I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Andrew Collier. His book, In 22, China's Technology War. The word prescient applies. But Andrew was careful in 22 not to come to conclusions, just to observe the tensions that are introduced by Xi Jinping's common prosperity theme and the enforcement of those themes on the tech giants that were growing apace with the tech giants in the U.S. at the time. Alibaba was a worthy competitor worldwide, eventually, to Amazon. The others also, the gig economy was working everywhere, but China took it down. The fast food, ordering food in, being delivered, was working everywhere, but China took it down. Now we come to poverty, lifting people out of poverty. There is a remark in your book, and I'm sorry I didn't write down the author. It's very clever. He said, if they keep this up, we'll have common poverty, not common prosperity. And that is apparently what we are now observing. There's, according in 22, 17% of the population remained in poverty. Extreme poverty had been mitigated. They ate every day. However, the redistribution has not worked out. Did Xi Jinping know that in 22, that it was a camp, that it was PR, that it was marketing and not real? Or is this a revelation to them 3 years later that the unemployment lines are bigger than ever? They don't even print statistics anymore. And these are young people without jobs. Did he know that was coming?
I believe that Xi is honestly thinks that he's trying to help the common man. I don't think he's a completely cynical leader and just power hungry sort of crazy person. However, he's also fighting against his view that, he, as I said earlier, he doesn't like the idea of helping people consume and get rich. He doesn't like the idea of buying big fat automobiles unless it helps the economy. You know, that kind of stuff that we take for granted in the United States is not part of his DNA. So his a lot of his programs have not done very much to increase equality. And the expenditure on healthcare in China is among the lowest among many nations across the world, even among the poorer nations. And Xi has not done very much to help that. The second aspect of this is the property bubble. And I can't say that that was his fault. That was started before he came to office, although he didn't really stop it until 2020. So now he's stuck with this property collapse, which was 25% of the market of the GDP of the economy. And he's trying to make tech the future, but that's only about 9% of GDP at best. So he's kind of in a race for time, and I think it's a race he's going to lose.
Services. I note in your observations in 22 that she does not appreciate the power of services. That is the American economy. That is the European economy increasingly. Why does he have a prejudice against people living their lives by ordering food out or going to restaurants or being lawyers? Why is he against it?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, you could say that Xi Jinping's father sent him to live in a cave during the Cultural Revolution, which is when Mao sort of went crazy with the economy, when politics. And instead of hating his life living as a poor peasant, he seems to have taken it on board and said, well, gee, this is the way you toughen up and become a stronger person and help the future of China. And he's taken that attitude. He's made many statements about how we all have to toughen up and become, you know, better servants to the state. And because of that, he doesn't believe that increasing consumption is really going to be service the goals of making China a great nation on a par with the United States.
But the services economy, it's puzzling to me because it goes hand in hand with the hardware and the software. He knows this, but all right, fine. We turn to where we are today, 3 years later, and your reflections on your earlier rhetorical questions and the way you set this up. China is not richer than it was 3 years ago. I can't say what it is because the statistics are no longer trustworthy. However, the trade conflicts that are now extant, how do they fit into common prosperity? Is she digging in to hold off the American understanding of bilateral trade, or has he anticipated this? What is the measure given that they pushed out what would have been global technology firms Alibaba, if it had been left to run, would be a major bank globally now, to be right up there with Citi and Goldman Sachs. Does she regret that?
I don't think he regrets it. People look at China and they say, well, look at all the successes. You have this Huawei, you have these amazing electronic vehicles. You have DeepSeek, which posed a challenge to ChatGPT and AI. But what they don't see is the amount of waste that went with this. There's about 100 EV companies have gone under with wasted capital. So she's now, I think, is facing a situation where his tech investments will pay off, but with a huge amount of money wasted. And meanwhile, he's struggling to deal with this debt-fueled property bubble that has been 25 years in the making. So, and now, because of his antagonism in the South China Sea, what I call gunboat hostility, he's made many people around the world, including the United States and Europe, angry both at the militarization of China and also the huge subsidies that went to goods like autos that competed with European automakers and U.S. automakers and so forth, what we call the China shock. So my view, which is not in the minority here, is that he's gradually going to have to soften his rhetoric. And at some point, he may even have to soften his gunboat hostility in the South China Sea against Taiwan and Southeast Asian nations, because he desperately needs exports. He desperately needs to keep the U.S. dollar trade going. And he can't afford he has no other levers to pull, really, apart from his things like rare earths, which are important but not crucial, to try to keep the economy globally engaged. It's one third of the GDP of China comes from trade. So I think we're going to see a shift in policy going forward, assuming that Trump and Xi Jinping don't get too angry at each other.
Is it possible to go back and revive ANT, or at least the concept of online banking and transparency, because that would encourage the consumer?
I spent a lot of time in China, and the amount of capitalist fervor and competition is tremendous. If they had a different leadership and a different view, if the party had a different view of its role in society, I think a lot of these companies like Ant could be revived quite quickly, and it would be a very impressive turnaround for China.
And the observation by the ideologists, is this the China they imagined? Your explanation for it, and you hear lots of talk, was this going to be the inevitable end of their understanding of discipline?
I think Xi Jinping came into office considered a weak leader, and he didn't know his own power, and he's gradually built up his power, and he's sort of at the peak right now. I think that they're very pleased. Wang Huning, his ideological czar, and Xi himself are probably very happy with the way things have gone, except now we're starting to see peak China and the economy slow. And I think they're trying to figure out a way to get around this. And I think they're going to get increasingly unhappy with the direction of things.
And the Xi Jinping endgame, that your final chapter in 22, do you want to add anything to that? We have 30 seconds. Well, what else did he imagine? The third term, did he have that in mind in 22?
There is talk about it, you know, just staying in office forever, but I don't think that's going to happen. He recently stepped away from some leadership positions. I think he's going to get pretty fed up with the bad hand that he has created and has been dealt to him, and he's going to want to maybe move on.
Andrew Collier, the book, Prescient, in China's Technology War, Why Beijing Took Down Its Tech Giants. The new book will be Empire of Dust.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.